Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I am your host, Jessica Concepcion, and today we have a special guest joining us from the Human Trafficking Coalition of the Palm Beaches, Laura Cusack. Laura Cusack is the chair of the Human Trafficking Coalition of the Palm Beaches. She is also a member of the Palm Beach County Human Trafficking Task Force, Palm Beach County Sexual Assault Response Team, and People with Disabilities Community Consultant Panel. Laura's experience includes providing training to service providers on specific needs of crime victims with disabilities, on human trafficking, and on crimes against children, facilitating psychoeducational groups for high-risk youth with trauma-related disabilities, leading community outreach efforts, and instructing criminal diversion curriculums to men arrested for buying sex. Laura previously launched the HOPE campaign in Florida, a community outreach in Palm Beach County that works with local hotels to identify missing children and increase public access to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. She has also conducted street outreach with law enforcement to women in street-based prostitution to promote safety and wellness. Laura is a member of the Palm Beach County Human Trafficking Task Force and regularly attends the Statewide Council on Human Trafficking meetings. Laura earned her master's degree in social work from Florida Atlantic University and is certified in the My Life, My Choice, I Empathize Empowerment Youth Program, and Men Breaking Free National Curriculum. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay. And then before we jump into all the topic of the day, I would love to know if you could have a superpower for the day, what would it be?
Okay, so for most of my life, I'd probably say to be able to fly. I always wanted to be able to fly. And as a kid, I was convinced that like I actually thought I used to do, like, I think I would dream about it. And like, oh, no, I really could fly one time, remember? But now, I would say, I don't know, to be able to breathe underwater and, like, swim and see, like, all the beautiful, you know, like, reefs, but also not be afraid of.
Oh, yeah. Like, you would have to have, like, gills or something.
Yes. I guess, basically, that's like a mermaid, but I don't know. To be able to breathe underwater so you can see that beautiful underwater world.
Have you been scuba diving at all?
I have not. I like to snorkel. My husband scuba dives, okay. But I'm a little too, that's why I need to also not be afraid of it.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see. You can go into like a more like a conservative or conservatory. I don't know if they have that, but like a, yeah. Where it's like safe.
Yes. Yes.
I understand. There's when you see videos of like what's in the water in the ocean, it's terrifying.
Yes. And that's just what we know, right? What we don't know, who knows?
Yes, there is actually a statistic that says, I think 70% of the ocean's unexplored. So wow. Yeah, it's like, that's it's huge. Random fact of the day. But back to the main topic, anti-trafficking work. How did you first learn about human trafficking?
Yeah, so actually, as a high school student, I got involved in overseas missions work. My dad was an inner city pastor in another state, and we're supposed to be a whole family. We're supposed to go to Africa with a church mission trip, and right before that, he got assigned to an inner city church, so it ended up just being my mom and my sister and I, and we went to Uganda for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I really fell in love with it. Did, you know, the typical mission trip stuff, you know, work with local churches and that kind of thing. And I just felt like there was more, like I wanted to go back. And there were no trips at the time. So my mom, thankfully, was very supportive and put together our own trip of just me and her, went back that following summer. And actually to a whole different part of Uganda, stayed with a family and just jumped in like a local grassroots organization, and stayed the whole summer. I think it was like 8.5 weeks.
Oh, wow.
That we lived there and did whatever we could, you know, teach in the school. We kind of fundraised for it, but went prepared, but not with a plan. So we could see what the needs were and kind of adapt with what the locals were needing. And then did it again a second time the next year and the summer again,
oh,
going back and different.
It was even just a heart to help and reach out to people.
Yeah. And just knowing, you know, when you go on a mission trip, you often, you know, you're in a decent hotel, you're eating good food. You know, I just knew there had to be more and I wanted to get more like with the people. So to be able to live with a family, they were, you know, running the local program, but, you know, we had no running water, no plumbing, all of that. It really helped immerse you in the culture and the life. Yeah. And on at the same time, I remember being a high school student and going to like a school club and learning about, at the time it was Joseph Kony and child soldiers and invisible children and the Lord's Resistance Army, and talking about this horrible war that was going on, abducting children, forcing them to be child soldiers in or near Uganda. And I remember my sister and I looking at each other like, oh my gosh, like we're going there like in a couple of weeks. Like what? We hadn't heard of this.
Oh my gosh.
Like what's happening to children? So I really learned about that. And then on, you know, trips after that, got to go to some of the areas where Joseph Kony and his rebel army had been. They had left the country like the year before, but we were still going to those refugee. I wanted to go see those refugee camps and really hear the stories, bring them back and show people this is really happening here, try to meet some of the needs, etc. So at the time, I had no idea about human trafficking. I didn't know about child soldiers being in that category, you know, girls and women being forced to be these like sex slaves and in the army and the rebel, you know, but I was talking with them and learning about it, just didn't know it was human trafficking at the time.
Yeah.
So after three trips, you know, on an inner city pastor's budget, we basically couldn't afford to keep going back because it's expensive. And so I was forced to look at what was happening here that I could kind of throw my heart and passion behind. And at the same time going off to college, thinking I'd be wanting to study missions, and kind of go that route. And I learned about someone through, again, the church at the time that was a social worker that was working with human trafficking victims.
Oh, wow.
And so
look at God.
That's how I started to learn. I know. Unfortunately, it came together my senior year, so it's too late to change my major at that point. But I saw and knew what she was doing and learning about it and thought, oh my gosh, like this is what I would want to work in. And so that dictated then for grad school going into social work for the purpose of working in the field of human trafficking. So I was able to intern with her and learn everything I know really from her, and get plugged into that issue at the time. But it was just crazy looking back and being like, wow, you've been kind of involved with this all along. You just didn't even know.
Didn't even know. And you kind of touched on it, but just some of the motivation behind, you know, just wanting to help. Where do you feel like that comes from? Like what makes you like passionate to continuously serve others, and to highlight these great injustices that's happening around the world?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, to me, I always feel like it was something that was like innately taught to me. Like we just, in my family, that was just kind of what you did. And I think, you know, that's so much of our calling, like as Christians, is to, you know, I really believe in going to the people and wherever that is, whether it's down the street or in another country. And I just felt like that was something that I felt very called to do. And the way, you know, at the time of a high school student, to be able to pull off like trips that maybe like some unsafe things probably could have happened, but I felt like they didn't because God was really blessing that the whole way. I mean, crazy things that, you know, just worked out that probably shouldn't have, that it was just all, I felt like it was so much a part of his plan and just everything fell in line. And then even to the point of being able to then transition to human trafficking, you know, so much of that passion I had for those I met in Uganda, and I was very passionate about, you know, the war that was going on and all of that, that same kind of passion was able to apply here. And my eyes were open to the fact that there are people here who are, you know, being forced to do things against their will and, you know, in this kind of different type of slavery situation, but that also need to be advocated for. And I felt like both are important. Do both if you can, overseas and here. But I just felt like that was something that God, I think, opened my eyes to, and gave me this role to help other people see that that was a need that's here as well.
And it is amazing because I think, you know, there's a lot of people who don't know how they can help, or maybe they don't have all the facts, you know, but I think what really works is like when you find a community that is also and like you find people around you who are like, oh, this is what we're doing. Do you want to come do it? And then it's like a spark, you know, because especially you said like as a teenager or in high school, right. Your mind's just, you know, like you're learning from the adults, right? So then it's like, okay, how can, like we all kind of like, you know, encourage each other down a path, but I know a lot of people want to help, but as adults, you know, like people have less time. So how do you even still find time to like be in, I mean, to just volunteer time with these things?
Yeah. And I think that's, for me, that's been hard to get my head around too. Like, because, you know, so much of my experience with like volunteering or missions was like, you literally leave everything behind to go do it. And you're there for the summer and you're like all in. And, you know, through that time, I remember like, there's entire years of just like movies I never saw at theaters. Like, I don't even know about them because I was just all in on like, how could I spend $8 on this at the time when I know people that are starving, you know, each summer that I go see. Wow. So to me, it was like hard to kind of see, okay, so not everyone, you can't just quit your job and go. Some people can, but you know, how, what does that look like realistically here? We still have families, we have jobs, we have life here. How can we still have that impact, but also still maintain these responsibilities we have here? Yeah. And that's something I think I'm always working through because it's hard, but there are things that you can be doing, and even in our own circles. And that's why I love being able to work on the education side of this issue, mm-hmm. because there's so much prevention that can happen just from having conversations and learning about the issue and telling people and telling other parents and other kids. Like, we're really able to protect, you know, individuals that would otherwise be vulnerable. And I think that there's such a great opportunity right now for the church to step in that role and help facilitate some of that education as well.
Because we actually met at a local event.
Yes, church event. Yes.
So Char Talmadge, she's the one that invited me to the event when she was on the podcast. Yeah. So she was like, oh, we're having this event in January, you need to come. I was like, I'm trying to come. So then when I got there, I was so impacted and moved by the movie and just how important it is to get that education out there early in someone's life, because basically the movie, what was the movie that we watched?
Shattered Dreams.
And the majority of it was a story of three survivors, and each one of them were interview and sharing their stories. And it seemed, I believe from my memory, most of them began their trafficking, or they were trafficked early, like in their teenage years, mm-hmm. and how they got, how that just all could be prevented if children were equipped with the right information. So like, exactly what you're saying, like education here in America, it's like key to prevent kids from making some like being in relationships, the boyfriend method.
Mm-hmm. And I think for parents, you know, it's very overwhelming. Like, where do you begin with that? And I think, and that's part of what we do through our education programming, is helping, you know, guide those conversations. But I think that's really a great place, you know, to have these conversations within the church environment, I think is so important. And I'm not sure, you know, I haven't seen it happening at as great a scale as we need it to be, I think, to keep up with the rates and the issue and the scope of the issue. But if parents can kind of be able to go to churches and church leaders and kind of have that support, or maybe have that education already coming in, or, you know, just dialogue about it in an open environment, and just face the realities of what we're seeing, I think that is such a great opportunity for the church to really be a part of this issue and support families, because we're all about obviously raising families that are healthy and safe and, you know, the way that God intended them to be and all of that. Yeah. But this whole animal of human trafficking, and especially the online piece and online recruitment and sextortion and pornography, all of that, we like can't ignore it because it is continuing to just get out of control. And I think sometimes it's hard to take it on, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a lot. It's a lot of conversation. And I know there's always a lot of conversation about this generation's so different or like,
yeah,
you know, and like they are, but it's because, but we have to, as adults, we have to be able to be moldable and open to how to communicate with someone who might not want to be on the phone talking to you, who prefers text message, or who prefers to, you know, go to Starbucks instead of staying in. You know, there's like this, it's a very different culture right now. So it's so important to be connected, I think, but also have the wisdom to be able to share the information. So like, what have you found when you're doing the outreach events has been most impactful in regards to like either reaching the younger people or reaching the parents?
Yeah, I think just any education has been impactful with the parents because they really don't know, you know, they're just kind of dumbfounded. And what you said about like, oh, you know, this generation is so different. I do think, you know, to put it into perspective, thinking about, look, our previous generations are the ones that brought us the amazing technology and internet and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And we just kind of like then didn't really follow through on the promoting safety and teaching those skills as these current generations or even my generation grew up. And so we kind of like, not intentionally, but kind of set them up to fail in the sense that they didn't learn, because we were all learning at the same time, mm-hmm. how to be safe online and all of that. So I think part of why it's so different now is because they just didn't learn how to, you know, do that. And that's where we have a responsibility to kind of teach that. Yeah. And so when we go in and we train parents, we like to talk about, you know, first of all, what are the risks online? What is happening? What's taking place? And some of what I can share with you, you know, some of what we're seeing in terms of trends is a huge increase in what we call sextortion, where individuals are online and they're creating fake profiles of, you know, acting like they're another teenage girl or teenage boy. They're friend requesting or messaging our teenagers, acting like they're romantically interested in them, then sending maybe a sexual photo or video of themselves, supposedly of themselves, and then asking for one in return from that young person. And the, you know, your teenager is like, oh my gosh, like flattered that this attractive person is interested in me and sends that picture back. And we're seeing this, like it really started to skyrocket during COVID and has just continued to just increase up and up and up. And it's not just girls. We're seeing actually a huge increase in teenage boys being targeted as well. Mm-hmm. And they respond, they send the photos back. And then what happens is that person basically blackmails them and says, well, now I have your photo. If you don't send more or you don't send money, I'm going to release these all over the internet. Your parents are going to see them. You're going to be your school, you'll lose your scholarships, yeah. Like complete devastation. And what ends up happening in, unfortunately, too many cases is that child panics, doesn't feel comfortable going to their parents because they know they'll get in trouble. Their parents will yell at them. They'll be ashamed. They'll be kicked out of school, whatever happens. And we're seeing a lot of kids that just take their own life as a way to escape it. And, it's really concerning. I mean, even locally, there were definitely some national cases, but I've even heard recently of some local, like Palm Beach County situations where that's happened. So we don't want that to happen.
I know the news normally doesn't broadcast suicide just because they say it's equivalent or like it encourages other people to potentially do it themselves. So maybe that's why we don't hear it as common, but if you're in the sphere of like working within social work, then you're most likely, you're going to hear it more. But like what's happening.
And it's, you know, you put yourself in that kid's shoes, like they don't know where to turn. And so you have maybe a 13-year-old trying to solve this problem that as an adult, I don't know if I could fit, you know, get myself out of that situation. And so we really try to encourage families to have an open dialogue about this. This is where you can't just say, oh my gosh, that's too depressing. I don't want to talk about it. Or I can't imagine thinking about my kid viewing pornography. I don't want to bring it up. Like we are not going to ever get on the other side of this if that's the approach that we have. Yeah. And I think sometimes that's what I see, you know, in churches, they might be afraid to take it on and tackle it because it's a really difficult pornography and all of that. It's hard. It's not like one of the top things that you might want to have, you know, an infant night on at your church, mm-hmm. right? It's really hard, but it's the reality of what we're seeing. And so I think if we can have those conversations in with the support of a church, it can really help.
And why do you think it's important to talk about pornography specifically in relation to like the conversation of how we even tackle the big picture of human trafficking, but then on the lower scale, yeah. it's like having this conversation of like, I'm assuming it's like sex, but boundaries, like having this conversation yeah. so that people are actually, or teens are equipped with the information to protect themselves. But what mm-hmm. I already know some of the connections between pornography and human trafficking, but what would you say, what's the value of parents having and breaking the ice with that conversation and removing some shame of actually having the conversation with their kids?
Yeah. So there's a group called Fight the New Drug, and we talk about them as a resource in our parent training. They have a lot of great, like literally you can click through like conversation starters to have with your kids. Really great. But one of the things they said is, you know, it's not a matter of if your child sees pornography, it's a matter of when. Mm. And that's where we're at this point. They probably already have. And so number one, it's important to have that conversation because they already most likely have encountered it. You know, they're at school, their friend shows them the picture, they're at a sleepover. Like it's happening. They watch commercial at this point. Like, let's be real, a YouTube, like it's pretty much not hard to find and they don't have to go looking for it. It will find them. So when somebody, especially the younger they are, you know, a young child or teenager sees that, and it's so normalized in our culture, you start to learn and think this is how relationships are. This is how you dress and act. This is how a boyfriend, girlfriend acts, a husband, wife acts. And what's portrayed in pornography is often very violent. You know, it's aggressive. It's not realistic. You know, the body image is not realistic. Like there's a whole slew of things that go along with it that is not realistic. But when a child is seeing it, being exposed to it without that conversation, mm-hmm. you see, and you like it's on social media. You see a celebrity, and you think that's how people really look in real life, and it's not the reality, right? So there's not that other kind of counter to that, and I think that's what's missing. So if we can talk to our kids before they even maybe have internet access mm-hmm. or can get exposed to that, then you start to plant the seeds that when, not if, they get exposed to those images or videos, they already kind of have that foundation of like, okay, I know that that's not how you treat people. I know that's not, but it's not a one-time conversation. It has to be ongoing as well. Yeah. And checking in and saying, you know, have you seen anything? Has anybody, you know, made you feel uncomfortable, sent you something that made you feel uncomfortable, yeah. monitoring social media. But also, you know, you may see examples, cases that come up in the news that you can talk about and say, look, I saw this. And I just want to talk about it. Like, what do you think? You know, how do you think of like that relationship? Because society is kind of trying to show that this is how relationships should be and they're not healthy. And so we have to really have that conversation to counter some of that dialogue. And then it creates the demand too. Sorry. Going back to your question about demand, you know, how this connects to trafficking, as we get desensitized to it, you know, these kids are online being asked to send a photo of themselves, would never get naked in front of a stranger the first time they were asked, but yet sending that picture from the safety of your own room, it feels safer. Mm-hmm. And so you don't think it's a big deal. You know, everybody at school does it, so you do it. Meanwhile, you're kind of creating this appetite for it. And that creates some of the demand that then goes out and buys someone that might be trafficked because you've just maybe grown up thinking that.
Sorry, you know, this is okay. You broke this up a little bit.
You can.
Sorry, you broke up a little bit. It like,
oh,
broke.
Sorry.
Just you were saying you're creating like, I guess from the safety of their
the demand own side.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. So if some, you know, the more you kind of grow up thinking and having like almost like an appetite for that, you know, at some point, that can create that demand where now you've got someone who's actually actively buying sex And that's what traffickers are trafficking people for, you know, for sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. So it is very much interconnected. And you can see lots of studies of people that have been trafficked that will, you know, tell you that someone came in and asked for something they saw in a pornography video, or, you know, like that's literally the training ground for some of this. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, some say it's addictive, and it's, you know, a lot of promotes a lot of violence that then are played out in real in-person relationships, based on what they have learned and seen in those videos. So it's definitely connected.
And I think it goes down to how we want to raise, you know, people who are compassionate, loving, kind humans, the complete opposite of what, you know, the porn industry highlights. It's like a very, me focused, you know, like your pleasure, your, the outcome of like sex is for you, but then the word, you know, doesn't teach that at all. It's like about each other, the relationship.
Yes, that's a great point. And like, yeah. And I think also there's a sense of like entitlement that comes with it too. Like I'm entitled to do this or have this because I want. One of the things that's very concerning to me that I've attended trainings on that seem to be trending among young people is like non-fatal strangulation in relationships where it's that kind of abuse where you're like choking out the partner. And this is among teenagers. Yeah. Like it's just normalized as like, that's what happens in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so we need the other side, the counter of that. That's like, no, that's not, doesn't have to be normalized like that. That's violent and abusive. And you don't, if you're in a relationship, if you don't want to engage in that, you don't have to.
Yeah. Even on the violence side, we can just say what happens as well is, I've seen a lot of, testimonies of women who were, in the porn industry, and then they talk about their experience. And when they're looking back at their experience, they're like, you know, I was raped multiple times, you know, during these shoots. And, and then there's like that gang rape. There's also, there was someone who mentioned, that they basically had her dress like younger than her age and like portray her as like a teenager or preteen, even though she's probably like, I think in her 20s or early 20s or something, but they make her dress like a kid so that, so basically like the whole message behind that is to attract people who are attracted, you know, who are pedophiles. So,
'cause there's a demand for that.
Or I also think like it can create a demand that that person who's viewing it never had, right? If a kid is viewing, you know, everything that you're exposed to as a kid, and we're talking about pornography, like this is not, you know, it's not like just like someone's body, like everything we're talking about, it's like don't you want to protect your child from the most violent, seeing something violent and filthy and inhumane at times, right? So, so that's kind of like what we're talking about. 'Cause I think it's really easy, like as a parent to say, oh, well, they'll learn when they're older. Like it's not right. Or they'll, you know, we'll have that conversation when they're older. But when you really start thinking of like, so do you want your 13-year-old to develop this mindset of like, it's okay to have multiple partners in one at one time or, you know, so I just think it's important to kind of lay the ground out to say, hey, like, this is what we're fighting.
And if you don't, you know, have the conversations, you know, these will be the teachers, these videos, because it is, I mean, I've had kids tell me, you know, they were on social media and they received a random message, a random video sent to them that was pornographic. They weren't looking for it. You know, if their parent found it on their phone, they'd probably get grounded and they didn't even go looking for it. It's finding them. So it's really not, you know, and I've had families that have said, you know, well, my kids don't have, you know, we homeschool, they don't have access to the internet without my permission. Like I've got it locked down and that's great. But I've literally been at presentations where I've had people stand up and say, hey, that was me. I had my kid's stuff locked down. And then he went off to college and he ended up becoming a victim of sextortion online because he was so vulnerable. So to me, you're just pushing the timeline back. Like, you're not actually preventing, right? You're just avoiding. And at some point, yeah, they go off to college, they're on their own. They can still be victimized as an adult, and it's happening. So I would much rather see them get the skills now. It doesn't mean you're talking to your three-year-old about pornography, right? Like, there, you can scale it. You know, when they're really young, talking about boundaries and, you know, relationships. And Kids Safe is a great organization that we kind of refer to for anybody, like, for the elementary and younger age. We only specialize in middle and high school age. But at that point, you're not saying human trafficking or pornography. You're just talking about some of those boundaries and, you know, your body and kind of secrets and things like that. People may ask you to keep a secret and how that can be, you know, sometimes a bad thing, et cetera. Abuse prevention, I guess. But then as it gets older, that online piece and kind of having that conversation so that they know, hey, if something ever happened that even I didn't want, I know I can go to mom and dad and they're not going to assume I dabbled in this. Or even if I did, okay, they're going to understand I'm a kid. And like, sometimes I don't understand the implications of things and the people trick you into it and all of that. And I don't have to feel foolish or ashamed that I can have this conversation and know that it's a safe space. And my parents will, you know, navigate this with me. That's how we're going to get on the other side of kids just being hopeless and taking their own life and thinking there's no way out of this. But I think the parents need the church support, you know, the parents need then the support from the church to kind of.
How do you feel that church can create more of like a safe space to have these conversations? Like, what would that look like in a more tangible way?
Sure. I think definitely bringing in education on this. So you could have a parent safety night. Even if it's not through our organization, there's so many great, you know, local law enforcement, other groups that could come in and just kind of guide that conversation. And I think just creating a safe space for the parents to come in and even just dialogue about that amongst themselves too, with that, you know, Christian leadership and all of that kind of mentoring with it, because sometimes it's hard to talk about if this did happen to your kid, you may feel ashamed to even bring it up in your Bible study or your, you know, small group because you're afraid you'll be judged of like, oh my gosh, how did your kid get into that? Like, what are you doing wrong? It's that's not what's happening. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's, you know, it's what these predators online are doing. And so that might be, you know, counseling might have to come out of that, whether it's through the church or outside of that. Walking through the after effects of like something did happen, right? Maybe this picture did get released. That family is going to need support from the church community to walk with them on that journey. Even if they are getting therapy somewhere else, it's a lot to kind of move past and move on from that. And I think if the church isn't even talking about it, it doesn't feel like a safe space to go for support. And our leader, you know, if church leaders don't even know, I think that's where it starts, maybe getting church leaders educated. So they know the realities and they know what's going on. And then they can prioritize this kind of education with the parents and families in their church. And it kind of trickles down and the parents get educated. They can then educate their kids to then be safe online. So if they are being groomed online, the kid recognizes it and can stop it and shut it down before mom or dad, you know, even has to get involved. So I think that kind of top-down approach is ideal, because then by the end of it, you've got a whole community that's aware, educated, not afraid to face it, and is connected to the resources in the community to address, you know, what's going on.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed this wonderful conversation with the lovely Laura and the importance of talking to children early about sex, pornography, boundaries, and how that not only keeps your child safe, but does have a ripple effect on this fight against modern day slavery, human trafficking. Stay tuned for part two, which comes out next Thursday. Until then, stay beautiful, leave us a comment or review wherever you listen, and thank you, and make sure to share this with a friend, coworker, family member, or someone in your neighborhood. The more we can spread this important message, the greater impact we can have today and tomorrow. Also, don't forget to follow over and on Instagram at @GalRestore. Thank you, and have a lovely morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you're listening. Goodbye.